From the shadows of the radio towers, this is the Gay PHX Podcast. Your community radio on demand.
It's gonna be a good day. And everything is going to go my way. It's gonna be a good day. The sun is shining bright and it's here to stay.
Hey everyone, I'm Delos with AmoryPack, and welcome back to another episode of the Gay PHX Podcast. I'm honored to be sitting in the host chair throughout the month of July while Billy takes a little time to catch up on all the behind-the-scenes work that keeps Gay PHX running. Between maintaining the website, updating the community calendar, producing the podcast, live streams, business listings, and everything else happening behind the scenes, there's always plenty to do. I'm happy to help keep the microphone warm while he gets everything caught up. If this is your first time hearing me, let me tell you a little bit about my pack, AmoryPack. AmoryPack is all about building community through education, mentorship, inclusion, and friendship within the pup community. Whether you're already a pup, just starting to explore the community, or simply wondering what all the barking is about, our goal is to create a welcoming place where people can learn, ask questions, make friends, and discover another amazing part of our LGBTQ+ community. If you'd like to learn more, I invite you to visit AmoryPack.com. You'll find educational and support resources, information about the community, upcoming events, and plenty of opportunities to connect in a welcoming, judgment-free environment. Now, here at Gay PHX, one of the things we love most is introducing you to the incredible people who make our community stronger. This week, Billy sits down with therapist Jade Rice, owner of Blooming Clematis Therapy, for an incredibly important conversation about mental health, trauma-informed care, coping strategies, and why self-care isn't selfish, it's essential. Whether you're navigating your own journey or looking for ways to better support someone you love, I think you'll come away from this conversation with practical tools and a fresh perspective. Before we hand things over to Brian, I also want to invite everyone to celebrate National Hot Dog Day on Wednesday, July 15th from 6 to 9 p.m. with Gay PHX at Stacy's at Melrose. The Gay PHX team will be on site creating custom engraved dog tags while Roro Dogs serves up their amazing hot dogs at discounted prices. CCTV will be your host for the festivities, and there will be contests, a 50-50 raffle, and lots of opportunities to have some fun, all while raising money for 1 in 10 and the incredible work they do supporting LGBTQ+ youth. It's going to be a fantastic afternoon of community, great food, and giving back, so we hope you'll stop by, say hello to the Gay PHX crew, and help support an amazing cause. And now, let's pass the microphone over to Brian, our Desert Den Daddy, for this week's Hot 3 events.
You're listening to Gay PHX, where community comes first.
Hey, 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 Phoenix, can someone explain to me how we're already halfway through July? I swear it was just Pride Month yesterday. Although if you still got glitter in your car, on your beard, and somehow embedded in your favorite black shirt, congratulations, you're doing Pride exactly. Because around here, Pride doesn't pack up when July rolls around, it just changes outfits. This week, we're belting out karaoke, like we're auditioning for absolutely nothing, learning new skills while building an even stronger community, and wrapping up the weekend with enough leather, dancing, and tea to make your group chat absolutely impossible to explain Monday morning. So charge your phone, hydrate, text a friend you're always saying we should really get out more, and remember, the best stories always begin with someone saying, okay, hear me out. Phoenix, Daddy found three. This is Brian's Hot 3, your glitter-soaked, community-approved Desert Den Daddy guide to where you need to be this week. Hot pick number one, Monday Night Karaoke at the Sazerac. Monday, July 13th at 8 p.m. Let's start the week exactly the way therapists recommend, by dramatically singing someone else's emotions into a microphone. Every Monday night, Sazerac hands you the mic and says, go make some memories. Whether you've got the voice of Whitney Houston, or you have your showerhead politely asking you to stop, nobody cares. That's the beauty of karaoke. You'll find great cocktails, incredible energy, a plenty of applause, and at least one person who's somehow convinced they're the fifth member of ABBA. No judgment, just encouragement, because in this room, confidence is the real headliner. And remember, it's not about hitting every note. It's about committing to the performance like you're accepting a Grammy in front of people you've known for exactly 12 minutes. Hot pick number two, Two-Spirit and Self-Defense Class at the Phoenix Indian Center, Saturday, July 18th at 2 p.m. This next event is something really special. The Phoenix Indian Center continues its Two-Spirit Self-Defense Series, bringing together community, culture, and practical skills in one welcoming afternoon. Led by Professor Mai, an experienced Dene black belt with 15 years of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu experience, this class is open to all ages and all genders. Whether you're learning your first technique or simply looking to build confidence, everyone starts exactly where they are. Bring comfortable clothes, bring a mat or towel, bring an open mind, because confidence looks amazing on everyone. And knowing you can protect yourself, now that's a power move. Hot pick number three, the Anvil Tea Party. Anvil, Sunday, July 19th, 5 p.m. Now let's clear something up. If someone invited you to a tea party and your first thought was tiny sandwiches and fancy teacups, oh sweet Dharma child, this is the Anvil Tea Party. The tea is hot, the conversations are hotter, and somebody is absolutely going to spill both before evening is over. And the WMW dancers will keep the energy flowing while the Anvil keeps the pitchers full. $5 Bud and Bud Light pitchers, $8 Michelob Ultra pitchers. No cover, just a two-drink minimum, which feels like a rule more than a gentle suggestion. Come laugh, catch up with old friends, meet somebody new, and remember, the only thing served faster than a beer is the tea. Phoenix, one of the best things I love about this week's lineup is that it reminds us that our community doesn't fit into one box. Sometimes we're singing off-key with complete confidence. Sometimes we're learning something that makes us stronger. Sometimes we're laughing with friends over a cold drink on a Sunday afternoon. Different spaces, different experiences, some incredible communities. So keep showing up, support the places that support us, compliment somebody else's outfit, buy your friend that extra drink, tip your bartender, thank your volunteers, and if somebody tells you they're just going out for one drink, smile. Because we all know how that story usually ends. Remember, community doesn't have to be a closing ceremony. It grows every single time we choose to be part of it. Every laugh, every hug, every conversation, every new friendship, because around here the glitter never settles. I'm your Desert Den Daddy Brian, reminding you that life isn't measured by how perfectly you sang karaoke. It's measured by the people who sang along with you anyway. You are seen, you are celebrated, you belong. And to everyone of you listening, thank you. Thank you for making Gay PHX part of your week. Thank you for supporting our local venues, our entertainers, our community organizations, our charities, and each other. Whether you've been with us since day one or you found us this morning, welcome home. Because Gay PHX is never just about events. It's about making sure nobody has to wonder where they belong. And around here, there's always room for one more at the table. Until next time, I'm coming to you from the shadows of the radio towers. I'm Brian, your Desert Den Daddy, and that's what's hot.
Want all the details? Head over to GayPHX.com, your one-stop shop for queer events, promos, and everything happening in the Valley.
This is what community sounds like.
This is Amanda Renfrew, enrolled agent with The Tax Person with your tax year countdown. Most IRS letters are not audits. They are mismatches or clarification requests. Do not ignore them, but don't assume disaster either. Most are fixable quickly with the right response. Get support with a free 15-minute consult at thetaxperson.com or look for me as The Tax Person on socials.
More stories, more voices, more pride. You're tuned in to the Gay PHX Podcast.
Today on Gay PHX, self-care isn't selfish, it's survival. Today's guest is a licensed therapist and owner of Blooming Clematis Therapy, specializing in LGBTQ plus mental health, young adults, and veteran trauma support. They're here to talk about coping strategies and finding your footing when life gets heavy. Please welcome to the rainbow-tinted microphone, Jade Rice. Hey, Jade. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I love that it's a rainbow tinted microphone.
So what brought you to therapy work?
I think this is it's maybe like a trope, but like a lot of therapists, I had a childhood that did not have super great experiences. I had a lot of ups and downs in my family, and I did not get therapy. My family did not get therapy. And so as I got older, I just developed this idea that I wanted to be to people something that I didn't have. I wanted to be able to give back the thing that I felt was missing. And so that got me really interested in psychology. And then when I was looking at master's programs at ASU, they had a program for marriage and family therapy, which I had no idea existed, but just reading the description, it felt like it fit that need so perfectly for what I was looking for and didn't even totally understand it. So now I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist.
And you have a focus on the LGBTQ plus community, correct?
Yeah. So in the beginning of my career, I worked at a couple of different community behavioral health agencies, mostly with children that were in the foster adopted system, working with families that were on access. And I worked with a lot of trauma, lots of different types of trauma, and developed a specialty in that area. And then I went from working with kids to working to older adults in skilled nursing facilities for a couple of years. And then I decided to start my own practice. And that's where I really wanted to start focusing on serving my community and the parts of the state and our overarching community that I felt were often underserved. So that's the majority of the clients that I work with. I still work with all ages, individual families and couples, but I would say probably like 80% of my clients at any given time are a part of the community in some way.
Now, you said trauma-informed care. What does that actually mean in practice?
Yeah, it's trauma-informed care. And also when it comes to working with LGBTQ clients, I think what is unfortunate is that people, other therapists will use these terms or reference these types of communities and these types of experience, but in practice don't actually know anything more than just the surface of that. But when it comes to trauma and understanding trauma, it's a really complex experience that can show up not only in just what people would say are like the typical like PTSD trauma type responses. There's probably a lot of basic symptoms people can see and know, oh, that sounds like trauma. But really understanding how the different types of traumatic experiences that people have throughout the lifespan don't just lead to those obvious symptoms. There's a lot of hidden internal experiences that show up in different types of relationship patterns. And there's just a different way that we have to take care of people that have experienced trauma and work with those things, because we need to help settle the internal experience and how that shows up in our body and our brain and our thoughts and our relationships. So being able to understand the complex differences between those nuances, I think, is really important. It's not just knowing trauma exists and this is how you treat trauma. It's understanding all of the differences within that and taking care to go slowly, because that's a lot of times what people need, is it's slow work sometimes.
So let me see if I understand, if I can try and make an analogy, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm wrong a lot. That's how I learn. So if we were to think of it as a physicality, and trauma is like you've got a cement block and it gets impacted, depending on where that impact is, how deep it is, and the different details of that depends on how you repair that on a cinder block wall. It's different if it's on the side, it's different if it's on the top. So is that the part of, you know that something's broken, you know there's trauma, but the details are what matter.
Yeah, and also it's not just the stuff that you're going to see on the outside that's obvious, right? Like a lot of times if there's a crack on the surface, there are going to be some spider web cracks internal
further down, right,
that you can't see.
Got it.
But yeah, I think that's a good way to look at it. Like a lot of people, if we're going on the surface level trauma-informed care, understanding like, oh, that's a crack, I understand how that happened, and here's what we can do to work with it. Like you can be really A to B with that, but being able to slow down and take a full scan of the entire block and doing that x-ray internally too is important, because that's where the depth is.
To understand the totality of the impact versus the surface level.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess you could also, that's where maybe the image of a tree and its roots can be really helpful too, because there's a lot of different roots that can branch off, and some are small and some are big, but they're all under there, under the surface, but they touch a lot of different things and a lot of different relationships and internal experiences. And as a family therapist, I think that's one of the things that's really important to think about with trauma, is it's not just the individual that experienced the trauma, it's also the other people in their lives, whether it's family, friends, romantic partners, that are also dealing with those ripple effects for what happened to the person. It changes the system.
What is, for someone struggling who can't like afford therapy, what are some things that they can try and do though?
Yeah, so that's why I've been on a little bit of an internal Phoenix area tour talking about this stuff, is a lot of services are not affordable for people lately. I think that's been true for a really long time, but the last couple of years, it's getting harder and harder. Just for a quick plug, there are options for low-cost therapy services if someone can't afford it through their insurance or if they don't have insurance. The one that I really like to recommend is openpathcollective.org. Every therapist on that platform agrees to offer a sliding scale rate of between $30 to $70 per session. So I think that's a really good just first option for people to look at if they can afford $30 or $40 or $50 as opposed to a copay or hitting their deductible. And also looking for interns. A lot of times interns will charge a reduced rate. But in those scenarios where that's not possible, or someone doesn't feel like they have the time or commitment to be able to put towards therapy, I think that's where we really need to be intentional about our coping skills. And it's another thing where on the surface level, people will say, we understand coping skills, we know what our coping skills are, but there's a lot more depth that is there under the surface when it comes to coping skills and self-care strategies. And I have a lot of different like tips and tricks I like to give people to help them build up their toolbox on their own to make it a little bit more effective if they can't do therapy or don't feel like they need it.
And how do they access that?
So I have a booklet that I've printed. I give that out. I go to like different events and give them out for free. I also have a free version of the booklet on my website for people to look at too, because that's just something that I want everyone to have access to. And then also too, those are some tips and tricks that you and I can go through and talk about together if everyone needs some coping skill tips.
I'm right? Totally down. Yes. Anything to help educate. I'm totally down with. Yeah.
One of the things that I think is important with coping skills is, okay, I lied, two things. I would say balance is really important and intentionality is really important. And I'll explain both of those. Balance, we need to have a really wide range of coping skills in our toolbox. You want to have things that you can do on your own and things that you can do with other people. So things that you do on your own, we call those self-regulation skills. Those are things that you're doing for yourself, by yourself. And then things that you do with other people to try and use another person to help us calm down. That's called co-regulating. A lot of times that's how we learn as people. Our parents, when we're children, co-regulate us so that we can then learn how to self-regulate. So you want to have things you can do on your own, things you can do with other people, things that take 30 seconds, 5 minutes, an hour, half a day, a full day. You want to have that whole range of time and availability, things you can do at home versus things you can do in the community, things that are free, things that are cost some type of amount of money. And then the big thing that I like to say for balance too, is you want to have things that are not only body focused, so helping our sensations, either calming our energy down or getting that energy out, but also brain focused, because a lot of us have a lot of pretty intense thoughts that can spiral pretty quickly, especially when we're feeling anxious. So we want to have some brain focused coping skills. And then the intentionality piece, what I hear a lot from people is they have things that they know that work. That's like their habit, their routine, it's the thing that they know is going to help them. But when we don't have that intentionality and we start doing things out of habit, the thing that did work now is maybe 20% less effective because we're doing it out of habit instead of really being intentional. This is my 5 minutes. This is my 10 minutes. This is my 30 minutes to take care of myself and to try and calm down. And when we're doing that, we're focusing more on the activity and the experience and being with ourselves, as opposed to just doing something because we need to do it so that we can go finish our work day. It just has a different feel. So those are two things that I think are really important for people to think about with their coping skills.
I think that I can relate to all of that as far as I try and no, actually, like as you're talking, it's okay. Yes. So do I do this? Okay. Yes, I do that. Like for myself, I sometimes cater a little time to either doodling or writing songs or playing video games. So that's my little me time, so to speak. And then I have my therapeutic friend time, which is with my best friend in the whole wide world, Alan, who's also the co-programmer and engineer for all of this craziness that we're doing called GayPHX. So that's also our brain power. And then because of the stuff that we do with GayPHX, we go out and we socialize so that we have socials time too.
Yeah, that's great.
So now
self- we're all good. And
go ahead.
Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, especially when I was working a lot with teenagers, that's where I would hear a lot of them would have really strong coping skills that worked really well. But then I would have to have a conversation with them of, yeah, your friends really help you calm down and you can co-regulate with them really well. But what do you do if there's a situation where you can't call your friend or you can't play your video game or you're at school or your work? That's why I think it's really important and why I tell people to think of the balance, because you want to think about all of the worst case scenarios. There's a difference between our preferred coping skills and the ones that we need in a pinch.
Understood. Yes. As much as I love Alan, he does have a life, so I can't always rely on that. So I understand. That's why we have queued up messages. Now, what I was also going to say is self-care gets thrown around a lot, but what does that actually mean to you?
Yeah, so I like to break it down in a couple of different answers. This is probably an annoying therapist answer. If you asked a question, I'm going to give you a different answer. I think that when we're thinking about our well-being and coping skills and self-care, we need to think about it in four different stages or phases. So the first phase is like our baseline, where we're living our life, we're feeling happy, comfortable, calm, content, whatever it is, like it's regular day-to-day life. And in that phase, we're going to be doing a lot of our daily routines, the bare minimum things that you need to keep being a happy, comfortable, functioning adult. That could be for some people like certain number of meals per day or eating a certain way or getting a certain number of hours of sleep every day or going to the gym, like whatever it is, the regular stuff you need to continue maintaining your life in a way that feels good for you. But we all know, like eventually something's going to happen. We're not going to feel happy, calm, content, relaxed. Things are going to start coming up internally, externally. That's when we start to notice like we're starting to go up a ramp. Our emotions might be increasing a little bit or getting a little bit harder to manage. Those are the moments where we're going to add in some of those extra self-care strategies, those extra things to try and give ourselves a boost. And maybe for your baseline, you see your friend once a week, but when things start getting hard, you make an effort to do an extra phone call or you make an effort to go out and do something fun that week. We're doing some of the extra stuff to try and prevent that experience from escalating so we can get back to baseline quicker. So we're adding in those extra self-care strategies for that boost. Now, worst case scenario, that's really not going to help every time. Things are going to happen. Life is going to get hard, right? We're going to continue to get to that peak crisis point where it feels really intense. We're really upset. We're really struggling. Those are the moments in that peak crisis experience that we're really focusing on using our urgent coping skills. That's where we're doing the stuff in the moment to try and just get through that moment and make it to the other side of that mountain, since we're at the peak. Those are the things where a lot of times you might have people doing more breathing activities. They might be doing more sensory-based activities. You might do more like energy release type activities. The old idea of hitting a pillow or screaming into a pillow or just doing something to get that out to help yourself de-escalate. Any of those things are peak crisis coping skills. Now, good news is our body can't always maintain that intense level of an experience, because when we get into that crisis mode, like everything is activated, we're in that fight or flight survival mode. We can't live in survival mode. At some point, either our coping skills are going to work or we're going to burn ourselves out. We are going to come down the other side of the mountain. But in that moment, after you're leaving crisis stage, we need to take care of ourselves to help us continue to get back down to baseline. So you might use more of the relaxing type coping skills. We might do more, I'm going to take a nap. I'm going to get my weighted blanket. I'm going to do some deep pressure type, like hugging of myself, or get some relaxing scent. Anything to help our body move through its de-stress period as best as it can so that we can help it back to baseline. So I think that's how I explain the difference of the different types of skills and strategies and how they should show up. Because sometimes people will have something that works really well, but maybe it's best served as a daily routine or a regular self-care strategy, but it doesn't work in those crisis moments. So then we need to make sure we have something for those crisis moments.
So I actually have
that was a really wordy a perfect, answer.
No, the entire time you're talking, I was like, I have the perfect example.
Good.
I really do. Okay. So we were out at IBC for the International Bear Convergence, and I had an awesome time, and I got sick. I got strep, and I also found out I got a bacterial infection, but I didn't know at the time. And I went to Eisenhower Urgent Care, which is the best place to go. That's where we were told to go. We're like, okay, we went there. And they said, oh, you're dehydrated. You definitely need IV. We can't do that here. You need to go to the ER. So we went to the closest ER, which is not Eisenhower. And I was at Desert Regional Medical Center. The team was incredible. Everything that they went through was amazing. I was in my own world dealing with what was happening to me physically because I was ill, as well as the environment around me, because they were their trauma one center. They can't turn anyone away. They were 42 beds deep by the time I got admitted, which meant I was admitted in the hospital, but there was no room for me in a room. So I was stuck in the emergency room hallway on a gurney with two other people for over 30 hours.
That's awful.
So all my coping skills and mechanisms were kicking in to try and help deal. Because this is they don't turn the lights off. They don't dim them so you can sleep. This is an active emergency room that is very busy. People are zipping down the hallway that you're a part of, and you just try and stay out of the way. While dealing with strep and, like I said, a bacterial infection, I later found out. And it was, thank goodness, I had my little gaming system so that one of my coping skills is to just escape into playing games or watching something. And I had my earbuds so I wasn't disturbing other people and I didn't feel like I was interrupting anybody else's world. You deal with your trauma, I'm dealing with mine in my little bubble here.
Yeah.
And then once I got up to the room and I had my own room, I was like, oh, and I felt like I could relax and de-stress finally. But yeah, I could not maintain that for more than 30 hours, I would say. That was, I was at the tipping point. I'd seen people tip over all around me throughout the night that did not have coping skills, that did not have a way to deal with it. And so it was an interesting experience that I do not recommend to anybody, but I learned a lot. And I learned a lot about myself, that I can handle sure these situations much better than others. Not a fun scenario.
And I think hearing your story, something that I hear a lot from people is when we find ourselves in abnormal situations like that, and we're doing our best and using the coping skills we know that works, but then they're not working. A lot of times as humans, our first natural reaction is to internalize that as we did something wrong. But really, it's the situation and the experience, not that we did a bad coping skill, but it can feel defeating at times.
And like I said, I could tell people did not have skills to help them cope. There was a lady that was in front of me who had been there probably 24 hours before I had arrived. And so she was at the breaking point, but she literally got a room and they were getting the room ready. And she's calling from her bed. She says, I'm not in the right place. And the lady hangs up the phone and literally walks down the hall and says, you're in the right place. Despite all that, she says, I don't need to be here. So she checks herself out.
Oh.
So she never, even though she was admitted because of all the other stuff that she was really there for, I don't even know what it was. Mental health may have been one of it, because 5 minutes later, she was back at the beginning of the line, starting all over again. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I've already been through all this. But you checked out and we warned you, if you check out, this is what will happen. But she just wanted out so bad. And she got out. And 5 minutes later, she realized she needed to be there.
Yeah. And again, like when our brain is going into survival mode and we're going into that fight, flight, freeze response, we're not thinking at full capacity. Like just making urgent, immediate changes to our behaviors and our thoughts and our environment to try and survive. But that's really, that had some unfortunate consequences for her. That sounds really hard.
Right. And it was just when I was being escorted up to my room, I saw that she was still there waiting.
Oh my gosh.
And I felt, but like I said, I don't know, maybe it is mental for part of the reasons why she was there. I don't even know fully why she was there, but obviously for whatever the medical condition was, once she got outside a few minutes, she was like, whoa, the reason I was here wasn't taken care of still.
Yeah.
And you were in the place that's supposed to take care of you. Why would you want to leave? I understand. I get the frustration. I get everything. I went through all of it. I get it. But then to then say, okay, I want out. That's the part that I don't understand.
And I think this brings up an interesting point going back to when you were asking me earlier about trauma, and I was talking about how it can show up in relationships. Not that I'm saying this is what happened to her.
Right. Yeah. We're completely speculating here.
But in general, one of the things that is really hard for people, especially if they experience some type of trauma in childhood, and it's by someone that is supposed to be a caregiver, we get these really interesting long-term reactions when it comes to attachment and relationships, because then people have these past experiences of, this person was supposed to take care of me, but they also hurt me. And so now our brain struggles to hold like those two things in balance, where we want to trust people, we want to develop a relationship and be vulnerable, but also that's scary. And in the past, that experience has led to actual harm. So then you see a lot of hesitant and defensive mechanisms that can come up and play out in really difficult ways in any type of relationship.
I'm trying to think how to ask the question, so I apologize. How does someone overcome something like that? Because I have not experienced something like that, but I know friends that have. And sometimes when I see them react, I wonder, is that because of something am I making sense there? Trying to play psychology 101 and understand some of my friends sometimes when things, I'm like, why would you think that?
Because you obviously care about them if you're their friend. And like I said, people that have experienced trauma aren't the only people that get affected. You're experiencing that ripple effect and seeing like something is different here, and you want to help and be supportive, but you don't always know how, and we don't all have to know how. But when it comes to trauma, we have a few different categories of common symptoms. One category is arousal, and that just means like nervous system arousal. So our body is reacting, again, as if it's in that survival mode. It's going to shut down, or it's going to get really hyperactivated because we're prepared to fight or flight. And a lot of times that arousal comes up from some type of intrusive symptom. And for a lot of people, it's going to be like a memory, like a flashback of something, or it could be a present day trigger that brings up those old experiences. So someone could be with a friend or a partner or a family member, and they say or do something that reminds that person of some of the old stuff that they experienced. Now they're having all of those intrusive experiences and memories and emotional reactions that they're having to navigate in the moment. And those types of symptoms then lead to one of the other big symptoms that people have to navigate are our thoughts and our emotions. Because someone that's experienced trauma has experienced something that was dangerous, unsafe, abnormal, they were in threat, they then try, our brains do this naturally, we try to figure out, why did that thing happen? And how can I avoid it? How can I keep myself safe? So then we develop all of these thoughts and beliefs about ourselves, other people, the world in general. And our brain thinks that if we understand that no one can be trusted or that I'm always in danger, if we operate under those beliefs, somehow we can keep ourselves safe and prevent that from happening again. Logically, we know that's not going to play out the way that we hope it would. But those are the common trauma symptoms. And so when you're saying, how do we help with that? Targeting kind of some of those areas, either for ourselves internally, trying to understand, what am I thinking? What am I feeling? What memories are coming up and how's it impacting my body? And what do I need to do right now to take care of myself and calm down? Or like going to therapy can be helpful to break all those things down. And then also having what we call reparative experiences. And that can happen naturally, or it can happen with the work and support of the people in our lives. So it could be that someone in the past had a relationship where they experienced domestic violence, and then they have a new partner, and that relationship is really safe and secure, and that new partner gives the person a lot of time and space to work through their emotions and still feel safe and accepted. That can lead to that reparative experience in our brain figuring out not everyone is like that, that I can say how I think and feel, and the other person will still accept me. And this is what it looks like to have a relationship like that. We're creating a new roadmap.
That's often what we tell people, is create your own roadmap when it comes to relationships. Now, what you're talking about also feels like things that military people go through as far as their experience, because you work a lot with them and veterans, but I guess they could pose possibly have this trauma before they enter the military. And then also, so is it a different level of trauma? Is it, how does that make sense what I'm saying? Sorry.
Yeah. I do work with a lot of military families and veterans, and it is interesting. I get a good smattering of both experiences. Some that have trauma before they went into service, and then some that experienced their trauma while they were serving. And then a couple that experienced trauma afterwards too. I think sometimes what happens is when we experience things as children, like that's what creates the initial foundation of our understanding of relationships in the world. And then we get older and we either have, hopefully, luckily, maybe a lot of reparative experiences, and we rework some of those narratives for ourselves and redevelop that foundation. Or we have different life experiences where someone goes into the military and experiences further harm, and it reinforces some of those original beliefs and a lot of times amplifies them. And what I hear a lot from the military members and veterans that I work with is, regardless if they experienced a specific traumatic experience where their life was in danger, a lot of them leave their service feeling dehumanized. They feel like another cog in the machine. They have this conflicting understanding of, the thing I did was important because I served my country and I'm proud of what I did, but on a larger scale, I'm not proud of the system itself or the government itself or how things are working. So it becomes this interesting like conflict of, on the individual smaller scale, I have some positive feelings, but on the larger scale, what did I contribute to and how am I making meaning of that? And that can be really hard to navigate. And if we're talking about an experience like that, I think in general, not just veterans have that experience. We're all a different part of the system and our society and culture at large. And I think a lot of us, the last few years especially, it's felt very clear that, yeah, we can make a difference. We feel like we can do things, boots on the ground in the community, to put positive things into our community. But we're also very clearly recognizing that there is an obvious limit for what many of us can do. And a lot of times it doesn't always matter because there's still a lot of larger things that are happening that are impacting us and our community members and our neighbors in really negative ways. And that's really hard. It's so hard to be a part of that.
Right. No, yeah, I completely agree with that statement. Especially right now, especially with,
I hear a lot from people.
The way that our community is under attack, especially the trans in our community. It's so frustrating. Mm-hmm. It's, yes, I've gotten on my soapbox a lot about that, so I'm not going to do it again here. What's one of the biggest misconceptions people have about seeking help?
I think one of the things that I hear a lot is, it's kind of like you are forming a relationship, right? It's a professional relationship, but it's a relationship where some vulnerability and trust has to be developed. That does not mean that one size is going to fit all. Not every therapist is going to be for every client, but it takes a lot of emotional and mental work and preparation for many people to start the process of getting therapy. And then I think because it feels like so much of an uphill battle for some people in the beginning, once they get a therapist and it doesn't feel like the perfect fit, that's where it feels really defeating. And I think a lot of people will just try and grin and bear it to avoid doing that initial work again. A lot of, basically every study about therapy says that the majority of what contributes to success happening in therapy is the therapeutic relationship between the client and the therapist. So if you don't have a good relationship, yeah, you can probably make some changes because you're still trying to do the hard work, but it could be so much better with another therapist that feels like a good fit. And it's important to put in the work to find that good fit, because we're all human. We're all different. We all have our own personalities. It's normal and not a bad thing to have to go through more than one person.
It's dating. You got to find the right person because you got to trust it. Again, yes. You're talking, it's a relationship. It is a relationship of sorts.
Yeah, exactly.
So if a listener is struggling and is scared to reach out, what would you say to them?
I would say the hardest part, I think, for many people is just deciding to take the leap, right? Like that going from recognizing something's not right here to then deciding for yourself, I need some extra help. For many people, that's one of the longest parts of the process, and it's the harder emotional process. So once you get to that point of recognizing and realizing and feeling ready to accept help, you have done a big part of the work. After that, the next steps are just looking at websites, looking at people's profiles, seeing if they offer a free 15-minute consultation call, and just having that no commitment, quick phone call to ask questions and for them to ask questions so that you can go through that process. But once you make it to that point, you have done a lot of the hard work already. And so I would say just remember that and remind yourself about that.
Jade, thank you so very much. I really appreciate you coming on. How can listeners follow your work and learn more about the services that you provide?
Yes, I am a GPEC member. I like to do the markets. I'm always at the markets, giving out the little booklets and doing different local events around town. Like I said, on my website, bloomingclematis.com, BLEMATIS.com. That's where you can get the PDF booklet. You can also read my bio and the bio of my intern and associate if anyone is looking for therapy. And I'm always happy to give out resources too. If I don't feel like a good fit for someone, but they don't know where else to go to get other referrals, people can reach out, and I'm happy to give referrals for other people around town too.
Awesome. Thank you so very much. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
Another reason we love this community.
I'm Daddy Dave, your friend in the fight to end stigma. And I'm the founder of Team Friendly, here today to talk about DoxyPep. Are you hooking up, living your best life? Keep it hot and healthy with DoxyPep, a little pill that helps protect you against STIs after sex. DoxyPep. Doxy is short for doxycycline, and PEP is an abbreviation of post-exposure prophylaxis, meaning taking a pill after sex. You've probably heard of PrEP, which is pre-exposure prophylaxis. That's taking meds before being exposed to HIV. But DoxyPep goes like this. Take one doxycycline dose soon after sex, for sure within 72 hours. This helps prevent bacterial infections such as syphilis, chlamydia, and gonorrhea. If doxycycline sounds familiar to you, yes, it also treats STDs. Ask your provider if DoxyPep is right for you. And if your provider doesn't know about DoxyPep, inform them. Or find a provider that meets your full sexual health needs. Live your best life with DoxyPep.
Pride lives here.
What a fantastic conversation. A huge thank you to Jade Rice for taking the time to sit down with Billy and share your experience, your knowledge, and your passion for helping others. Conversations like this remind us that taking care of our mental health is not a luxury, it's part of taking care of ourselves and the people around us. Thank you for sharing your story with the Gay PHX community. And thank you to all of you for listening. Every time you tune in, share an episode, attend a local event, or support an LGBTQ+ organization or business, you're helping build a stronger community here in Arizona. Before we wrap up, don't forget to join Gay PHX for National Hot Dog Day on Wednesday, July 15th at Stacy's at Melrose from 6 to 9 p.m. Stop by for discounted Roro dogs, custom engraved dog tags from the Gay PHX team, contests, a 50-50 raffle, and all the fun hosted by CCTV, all benefiting 1 in 10. We'd love to see you there. And while you're online, I hope you'll also take a few minutes to visit AmoryPack.com. Whether you're interested in learning about the pup community, looking for educational and support resources, or simply curious about another welcoming corner of our LGBTQ+ family, we'd love to help you learn more. Of course, don't forget to visit gayphx.com for hundreds of LGBTQ+ events happening across Arizona, our growing business directory, live streams, community resources, and every episode of the Gay PHX podcast. It's been a privilege helping out with the podcast this month while Billy catches up behind the scenes. Gay PHX has always been about community helping community, and I'm grateful to be a small part of that tradition. I'm Delos with AmoryPack. Thanks for listening, take care of one another, and we'll see you next time on Gay PHX.
We're together, the sun is bright, and there's nowhere better than by your side. We're together, the sun is bright, and there's nowhere better than by your side.
Thanks for hanging out with the Gay PHX podcast.
Be kind.
Be bold.
Be you.